Thank you for doing this. I'm gonna sneak over to your side though. So, first of all, just tell me who you are.
My name is Sarah Kendall.
Roughly what age are you?
I am 24.
24?
Exactly.
How do you describe your gender?
I am female. She.
What would you say your occupation is?
Oh, goodness. Right now, I am the workshops and trainings coordinator at the radio station here at WGXC. I am the program coordinator at this new oral history summer school happening here. I work at a pizza truck making pizzas, and I also work for some people who are trying to start an education project here in Hudson.
So these are, you have four jobs?
Yeah.
Okay. Are those all paid? Are those all paid jobs or?
No. My work at the radio station is volunteer staff, and my work for the Oral History Summer School was work trade, but will be paid in the future. The other two are paid work.
So can you tell me a little bit about the work that you did around Irene? Or
So at the time of Irene, I was working as the station manager at WGXC. It was our first year on the air and our sixth month on the air, something like that. And it was the first real emergency that we were trying to cover and that we were really aware of our role as a local media outlet. So I was working at the station and trying to help manage and facilitate some of our programming around Irene and trying to help serve as an information outlet for people.
And when did you first get concerned about, do you remember when you first sort of got concerned about that particular event?
I definitely do remember warnings that were happening on the air. And I remember they were just sort of part of our weather announcements was warning people to stay inside and stay off the roads and understand that there was something really major coming our way. And I just remember talking a lot about like the storm that was coming. But definitely did not. It definitely took a little bit of time to realize the severity of what was happening here. I mean, and in Hudson where I was, there was just really heavy rain, and there was a sort of sentiment of like, what? What was all that hype? People get so crazy over stuff like this, and that was like what I was living in. But my work here had me really plugged into. The most impacted areas, so it felt a little bit. I remember trying to wrap my head around what had just happened. Was sort of going back and forth between conversations where people were like, "Ha, we just got rain. That was so bogus." And then trying to understand the damage that people were experiencing.
So you were covering this for the radio station as the station manager. Can you describe a little bit more about what it is that you had to do to get the kind of coverage you're talking about?
So we don't have a generator at our transmitter site here. Our transmitter is in Accra. We don't have a generator there. So every time there's any kind of heavy storm, we go off the air. We do not have resilient infrastructure to be emergency broadcasters. But as a new radio station, I think a lot of people, or some people at least, in trying to figure out where and how to receive information, thought of us as a potential information provider. So we were off the air pretty quickly. We were off the air basically for the entire duration. I think probably it started to rain heavily, and soon after we were off the air, and it took us a few days to get back on the air. So during that time, we were not actually broadcasting. We were not a radio station during those days, or not a broadcasting entity. But I spent most of that time here at the station, feeling a little bit like an insane person at a radio station that wasn't broadcasting. But we were receiving phone calls from people who were asking a lot of questions. So the phone was ringing somewhat regularly with questions. We were all at WGXC's staff was in kind of trying to figure out how we could get back on the air, and then also considering the fact that we weren't on the air, how we could plug into online communication happening, because we also have our newsroom blog. So we were trying to keep that as a really updated site of information, or at least a site where we could link to other things going on. So we had the live blog that was happening at the Watershed Post live on our newsroom website, so that when people, if people looked towards us for information, they could see that going on.
The Watershed Post?
Yeah, the Watershed Post.
So your news blog pointed to...
Their live blog was embedded on our newsroom page.
Okay.
Tom should verify that, but I'm pretty certain that when you went to the newsroom page, you saw both that live blog and a link to their site.
Mm-hmm.
So we were using our newsroom blog. We were using Twitter. We had our live stream going, so people could tune in on our web stream, and so we were picking up some broadcasts from other stations that were doing live programming around it for those days that we were not actually on the air. And we were here answering questions from people who were calling. The questions that we were getting here had to do with road closures and people interested in helping, and people who were trying to figure out how to get around. So I think at that point, when we weren't actually on the air, we were trying to stay at least abreast of like the most current mm-hmm. information. So we were more like hungry media consumers during those days. We were just trying to aggregate. We were just trying to get a sense of everything going on. I was reading that live blog totally obsessively, and then doing a little bit of like kind of minimal output here just through the blog and Twitter. It was. This is maybe a different question, but it was totally the first time I've ever understood the value of Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I think I had a Twitter page open for those few days that we were off the air, and beyond, just like it was the first time I really actually understood how it worked and why it has some value.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we did get back on the air, because we had missed that because we had missed that on-air time when the information that was really important had to do with like getting people to safety and really connecting mm-hmm. essential emergency information to people. By the time we were on the air, that wasn't the sort of primary coverage going on. It was more relief efforts, connecting people who needed things with people who were coordinating to people who were trying to figure out how to help. So being some communications infrastructure around relief, and then also you know, trying to just keep information alive about what was going on because everybody had millions of questions. But then trying to actually really start a conversation that was a little bit more in depth about what does this mean moving forward in this area here. And that's something that I was really interested in, how we could, you know, since we couldn't be that kind of emergency broadcast entity, how we could be facilitating a conversation or helping to facilitate a conversation that had to do with some long-term thinking about how we recover from this kind of thing and how we learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
So the interviews, like our morning and afternoon shows, when we got back on air, as far as I remember, there was a lot of conversation. I think you were on the air with us during that time. There was a lot of conversation, both talking to people who had been affected and hearing different stories from people, and then also trying to connect with people who could really help us think about about moving forward.
When you said that you were doing Twitter, the Watershed Post live stream, which is itself an aggregator,
right?
And then you were doing additional aggregation. What other sources were you looking for information? Like, who were you looking for during the emergency time? What were there any other sources that you were looking at?
It was so strange that when people tweet something, and especially when their tweet would go into that aggregate,
mm-hmm.
their tweets come with a little icon, a little thumbnail icon, and
mm-hmm.
some people have photographs and other people have little like digital avatars.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the woman that you just spoke to, Andrea, I totally will forever have her little digital avatar embedded in my perception of who she is, because during that period of time when we were communicating, she was this little thumbnail image. And there's this sort of like characters emerged in that conversation. And guy who works for the Daily Mail, I don't even know how to pronounce his name, but Ivan La.
Mm-hmm. Ivan. His name is Ivan.
Ivan, whatever, I've seen it a million times. He like emerged for me as like a character that I really trusted during those days.
Mm-hmm.
He was consistently in that space. So like he might link to things in the Daily Mail or things elsewhere. And so I think I was being routed to a lot of different
mm-hmm.
outlets like Times Union, Daily Mail, Register Star, and other, well, I don't know if, yeah, I think his references were probably usually print-based, but certain like tweet characters would become really important sources of where to look for what kinds of information. Listening to some of the coverage on WIOX in Roxbury,
mm-hmm.
which is also where the Watershed Post ladies are, and
mm-hmm.
then and also, what are they called up on the mountain? WRIP.
Mm-hmm.
Those are places that we've tuned in quite a bit to their web stream to hear
mm-hmm.
both what kind of broadcast they were doing and also to learn about what was going on. This is, you know, all of the things that I'm describing, all the places I looked were all, like, I got all of those sources through the live blog on Watershed Post. So I think
mm-hmm.
even the places that I ended up, even if I was, like, on the Capital Confidential page of the Times Union, it
mm-hmm.
probably, I had probably linked there from the live blog.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was probably searching everywhere to like looking at all those websites, looking for information. But I relied heavily on those little tweet avatars who would point you in the direction of like, oh, this place is now reporting this. This place is now reporting this.
So you guys were able to keep the blog, the news blog going during the time when the terrestrial broadcast was off the air. Were you able to, do you have any idea if those webcasts or the news blog were actually reaching anyone? Or who they were reaching?
I don't know. I did hear from a couple of people, and this is like super anecdotally and just mm-hmm. people that I was talking to anyway. I did hear from a couple of people that they were finding the newsroom blog helpful. We had the live blog, and then at some point we started saying like we would put information there about like where you can drop off certain kinds of things and what kinds of goods people were interested in receiving and not interested in receiving, where you could bring canned goods or where you could bring sneakers or whatever it is. And when we're back on the air, that's something we continued to do a lot of broadcasting around.
Mm-hmm.
So like one of our sources for that was this Facebook page, Neighbors Helping Neighbors, which I can't remember when it launched,
mm-hmm.
but I know it was during that time, the Greene County Neighbors Helping Neighbors, and they kind of constantly fed us information about where there were sites that were picking up stuff. And so I think our newsroom blog was pretty up to date with like some categories of like, this is where you can find information. And we did a lot of linking to other places that we were finding useful. And then this is where you could find relief information. And actually, I also remember there was a day that Paul Smart was driving around Greene County
mm-hmm.
and calling us here with lots of updates. And we were contributing that to the, not through tweets, but through comments on that Watershed post, the live blog.
Because
mm-hmm. You could either tweet and get it aggregated there, or you could actually just sign in as and we were like guest WGXC.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when he was driving around and calling in with reports, and maybe we were back on the air by then, but I remember feeling like so much of the coverage routed through the live blog was based a little bit south of here,
mm-hmm.
and that there was like a lot of Delaware County in there and a lot of Ulster County. Where's Margaretville? What county is that in?
You put me on the spot. I don't recall.
Where like that area, yeah. Sort of like that felt really, really represented. And I remember feeling like we were doing something important when we were able to get some of the Greene County, mm-hmm. Greene County stuff on there. Oh, you know who's another source of information? I have to remember his name. From the Cornell Cooperative Extension, the guy who does... hold on, I'm going to find his name. From the Cornell Cooperative Extension... Mick Besser. That's his name.
B-E-S-S-E-R?
B-E-S-S-I-R-E. Mick Besser was doing a lot of... Was working with farmers and works with farmers in Columbia County and Greene County and does like soil testing and stuff mm-hmm. through the Cooperative Extension. But during those days, he was also driving around like crazy and talking to farmers. And so he was someone that we had on the air talking about how farmers were affected. And at the same time, you know, we have the station has a real relationship with the Cornell Cooperative Extension. This is maybe a little bit post those like the days of,
mm-hmm.
but they had put together some really good resources for people about disinfecting your wells and about mm-hmm. They had these resource sheets. And I remember talking to Andy Turner at the Cornell Cooperative Extension about they were really struggling to get that information out
mm-hmm.
and trying to figure out how to do that. And so we both did some on-air stuff with them, but then also were linking to these reports that they were giving
mm-hmm.
for homeowners and for people who struggling in the aftermath. Mm-hmm.
That was also getting fed back into the live blog.
Yeah, so that was also getting fed back into the live blog. So someone like Andy Turner, so that's what was so crazy about that whole period of time where it felt like I had entered this universe of conversation that was happening on this live blog, and it felt so full to me. There were tons of there were so many people involved, mm-hmm. and then I would go home and there was this weird disconnect in Hudson where people were kind of like not totally plugged into that, like it had passed and it mm-hmm. had just been this rain and come home after like hours of sitting at the radio station staring at this feed and like trying to connect people and saying like, oh, you just asked this question. I just saw that, like, we just got a phone call from this person saying this, and trying like this sort of adrenaline of that. And then stepping out of it and realizing that people who are, that are not participating in that forum just have no idea that it's happening. It just doesn't exist. Like, it exists for those of us who were, it was really like consuming, and for people who weren't, that I just think that I mean, that's part of why it was, part of why we were trying to be a place that could bring some of the information that was being passed around in that forum onto the air or onto our newsroom blog or to people who were calling us. But but the Andy Turner thing was a perfect example of someone. They had all this, these amazing resources at the Cornell Cooperative Extension that they didn't know how to get around, like, get out there, and posting those on that live blog felt like a really effective way at the time to tap into a community of people who were in lots of touch with people who might need those resources.
So in this case, that felt more, that felt more useful, it sounds like, than the live broadcast that you were doing here.
Yeah. It definitely felt like you could feel, it felt like stepping into really, really different mediums, media, and like the stepping like onto the, like out of the digital and into the and into the analog and vice versa, felt like, like how do we, like how do we bridge these? Like, there's this, there's this crazy communication ecosystem happening on this, on this live blog, which is aggregating all these Twitter feeds. Like, how do we, what are some more ways that we can get that information to people who are not, because, like, for an example is that, I mean, a perfect example of when we could do that is when we would get a phone call from someone saying like, hey, do you know when the road in Preston Hollow, when whatever route is going to be open again? And I could post that question to the live blog and say, a caller wants to know this, and I would get six responses and then be able to tell him over the phone. So being able to be a bridge into that. I mean, I do think, you asked about how many people were using us. I think probably very few, especially because we weren't broadcasting during those few days. But it felt so important to us to like, for when anybody, and even if it was just 20 people, did look at our site or call us to find out, that we could be a source of up-to-date information, even if it wasn't like to the masses. And then again, being able to be, to get a little bit of Greene County information out there when that felt like, like a little bit of a missing link on that live blog.
So let's make a little timeline here. So there was the there's sort of pre-Irene, and there's a little bit of a time there where I assume both on the news blog and also
on the air,
you were making these kind of announcements. And where were you going to get that information? Like, to when you said you were broadcasting warnings and things, what was the source of those?
So that's a question for Tom, because I think those were just routed through, like, that would be, in that case, I'm more like any WGXC programmer or someone who would be on the air here would be looking to our news blog, which would have pretty consistently refreshed, like, weather information that Tom would source. And I think that's from the, like, NY, the, what does he use? He should answer that question. He uses the, I can never remember what it's called. There's links to it on the newsroom blog. But so I think those were coming from our, whatever our regular sources are for weather and then emergency announcements.
Okay.
And it's funny, I really can't remember very well that pre, except for I remember knowing that it was coming. And so I imagine that we were saying that on the air.
And then there was this emergency period where, when did it become clear to you that this was an emergency? Do you remember that?
I don't.
It's okay.
I think, like, can't remember. I think pretty quickly, recognizing the disconnect between what was happening around me and then trying to check online to see what was going on elsewhere in the world, and realizing that there was, I think pretty early on I found the Watershed Post,
mm-hmm.
and realized that there was a whole different conversation happening. Because I just remember so well the kind of like the early, when people were still on their roofs and when there was a lot of information out there about, or people, when the information that was getting passed around was like, these people are stuck over there and these people can't move over there.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being really attuned to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, in this, like, so this, the emergency piece was both, there really was this kind of like, we were in this strange dead space here where we were.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that you are not an emergency, that you don't have the backup generator and so on?
Because we can't afford one. It's something that I think we should be able to make. We should be able to make a pitch at some point that's something that Greener Columbia Counties or that someone interested in Greener Columbia Counties could really recognize as being an important public service, that we need to have broadcasters able to broadcast in exactly those moments. But and that's exactly, I think it's WRIP that has a generator that was donated by Delaware Engineering something in Albany,
mm-hmm.
and that was helped, that the county helped, their county helped coordinate that.
Mm-hmm.
I've applied for grants. I applied through for a Dyson Foundation grant. They were giving grants post-Irene, and I applied for a grant from them, kind of trying to make an argument about what this taught us. About this is a perfect example of why we really need a generator here in order to be the kind of service that we want to be, but we don't have, that hasn't happened yet, and we don't have the resources to buy one. I think the number that we toss around is $20,000, and that's like just under 3 months of operating costs here, and not something that's in our budget for the foreseeable future.
Mm. Okay, so how long did you? So back to the timeline, how long was the emergency period in your mind? How long do you think the emergency lasted?
I'd be interested for me to say that and then see. It's hard to, that time feels so elongated to me. Those few days, however long they were, felt like totally like weeks. I think there's the emergency time that was when people were in situations of emergency, and then there was sort of like at the radio station what felt like emergency broadcast time. I think for 2 days here we were off the air. I'm not sure that's true, we should check that, but my memory tells me it was like 2 days that we were off the air and that we were trying to engage in some of the emergency communications. I think it was probably, I want to say it was about a week before we were like, before our morning and afternoon shows were bringing in guests to talk about music, or at least I was ever, that I would think about another kind of programming that wasn't centered around Tropical Storm Irene.
Mm-hmm. From the time that you got back on the air, which was about 2 days after the storm, there was a solid week where there was nothing but Irene coverage.
That might be, I think we probably had like, I'm sure there were programmers on the air during that time who were not doing Irene coverage, but I think
mm-hmm.
all of the coverage that as a station manager I was helping to coordinate and trying
mm-hmm.
to make happen was definitely... And again, kind of moving into territory, like, okay, how do we, like, we talked to Ira McIntosh remember that conversation, who was a hydrologist.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to talk to a lot of different people whose houses had been affected so we could just hear different voices of people. We tried to talk to different emergency, county emergency offices. They were extremely hard to reach. The Green County, whatever they're called, the Green County Emergency
mm-hmm.
Management Office, that was like, I think especially because the live blog gave me a sense of how other counties were communicating,
mm-hmm.
and I think it felt like Green County was not only represented by media outlets in that conversation, it also felt, with the exception of Ivan, who was doing some Green County coverage, it also seemed like we had a really, really like silent and hard to reach emergency management office. I remember their website was like far more outdated than ours always. There was totally like lackluster information on there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, our coverage
compared to other counties, that was your feeling?
That was my sense that there was it felt like in being a part of that live blog, and maybe it's because we weren't the epicenter of impact here, but it really felt like there was like so little there. I remember people being like, and does anybody know what's going on in Greene County? Like that those questions would be put out there and there weren't answers. So there mm-hmm. was like, there was this acknowledged kind of hole there.
So could you map out for me where you think the places of the biggest impact that the storm had on? What are the places that in your mind were most impacted?
Oh man, I have to remember now. That name Margaretville came to my head.
Look on a map too if you want to pull up. We've got computers here. You have the power. That's not cheating. If you want to. Not check the time.
I really would love to look at just look at the emails that I was writing and getting during those few
mm-hmm.
days.
Yeah. So you want to pull them up?
Yeah, let's do that. Can you tell me the date?
August 28th was the day of the storm. I can bring up a calendar too. So, I mean, that's the day the storm hit here, because it was hitting other places, of course. From the it started doing its damage down in the Caribbean. Day marked on here, but I know it was the 28th, which was a Sunday. It was the day that we had problems.
Okay, so on the 27th, we were having conversations about... Okay, this is good. On the 27th, which was a Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm.
We were having conversations about, we were contacting broadcasters that day at WGXC to tell them that they didn't have to come to the station if they felt uncomfortable driving in the storm, so we knew that something was coming. Tom wrote me on Saturday saying we should be, because Sunday is not a day that we have our regular local news programming. He had written me to say we should be putting as much vital public information on the air as possible during Sunday's shows. We should check in with hosts about that and make sure they're on board with making weather and public information as announcements as necessary. Maybe some shows can be largely about this. We had also had John Farrell, who's the director of Greene County Emergency Services. We had had him on the air that Friday, and he had agreed to be a contact for us during that time. So
mm-hmm.
he Tom says in this email on the 27th that he was eager to return on the air.
The 27th?
Yeah.
What day did you have John?
We had him on the air on the 26th at 5 p.m.
And that was Friday?
That was
Friday. Friday before the storm.
Yeah. And so we had We had...
He's
the director of Greene County Emergency Services. They're the ones I was just saying were so bad. He was our contact there. And he was telling us that people would be at the emergency center all day Sunday so that we could use them. We could call there for information.
Okay. Did you guys wind up doing that?
But
it was hard to get through? Or?
I think that is a place that we went, but it ended up being not our major, mm-hmm. not our major source. And then Tom was updating the newsroom constantly at that time. He had said, finally, if the power goes out at the tower site, we are off the air and we have no backup plan. We had a plan if just Hudson had gone off the air to broadcast out of ACRA. So that was the 27th. That was some... that was our communication leading up to it. And then... we also were preparing on that day to have the watershed post Julia and Lissa on the air on Sunday. Because we knew, because they were prepping to do coverage.
So it sounds like you really had the sense that it was going to be a big storm already. Were already prepared for a fairly large event.
Oh, you know what was also happening? Phil Grant was at his house, and he was aggregating information on his own. I don't know what his sources were, but he was sending us throughout those days. He was consistently sending us audio recordings that he was producing at home.
Okay.
I'll play one right now. Let's see if it plays. This is from the day before. This is from the 27th. Uh-oh. Maybe not.
Emergency manager.
Here we go.
Green update from... this is a Hurricane Irene update from WGXC 90.7 FM. The New York State Emergency Management Office is staffed up and ready for Hurricane Irene. There are more than 40 state agencies working from the safety of the state's underground emergency operations center to coordinate response efforts. Emergency managers are asking New Yorkers to do their part as well by stocking up on supplies ahead of the storm and heeding all weather warnings. The Thruway Authority is also getting ready to handle any impacts from Irene. Governor Andrew M. Cuomo announced that President Obama has granted his request for a federal emergency declaration. This declaration will enable the federal government to provide assistance and resources to New York State and local governments to support activities related to the evacuation, sheltering, and other protective measures. Maintenance crews are deploying debris removal equipment, tested emergency generators at key buildings, and topping off tanks at travel plazas to ensure drivers and emergency personnel don't run out of fuel.
So that's
great. That's if you could forward that to me.
And so we were getting those while we were still on the air.
So he was producing those at home, and he was emailing them to you, and you were putting them on the air.
Yeah, exactly. Here's another one. He was using the Albany National Weather Service.
Uh-huh. Perfect. Okay, great.
I can forward those to you.
Yeah. So that was before the storm. So just roughly...
So this is a perfect example of... a lot of my emails those days are just from really random people who are like, hey, WGXC, do you know anything? Like, even just sort of like, this sort of what's going on. On the 29th, we were still getting these from
Phil. How many people, like, roughly, would you say you were in communication with?
This is Phil's.
The National Weather Service in Albany has extended the flood warning for small streams in Columbia County in east central New York.
It's actually interesting, just a note about us being this participatory station, this like media education project and not just a radio station, is that this was so much our first time dealing with something like this, and these recordings from Phil were his first time it's interesting to hear him play with that kind of news sound and stuff, because he was he was so on during those days, I think because he was using it as a learning opportunity to try to produce this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of interesting. I don't know how many of those emails I was getting, but I could do kind of a roundup check.
Well, just, yeah, ballpark. There's a couple other questions I wanted to ask you, so before we go. So, have you ever covered anything like this before, or what kind of, like, was this your, do you have anything to compare this to?
Not even a little bit, which is part of, I think, why I felt so, I think, yeah, no, nothing like that at all. I think, that's why, like, I can't even remember where we get our weather information from here. I think I felt very much over my head trying to figure out how we could be, what it meant to do really responsible coverage, here. And I think Tom did a really good job with the newsroom blog.
Mm-hmm.
But I have nothing like this that I can compare it to.
And overall, how would you rate the impact? I mean, you said that Hudson really only got some rain here, but what is your sense of what the impact of Irene was?
It seems like, and what I think is so crazy about weather events like that is that it can hit some people so hard, and two houses down, someone can be relatively unscathed, and that's like, it makes it really hard to make generalizations about what the impact was, because for one family it might have been really truly devastating, and for someone like in the same family it could have been a lot less so. I think seeing, a lot of people would send us photographs that we would put on the newsroom blog during those days, and seeing pictures coming in from Prattsville and from other places that had really crazy damage. My sense of the destruction is pretty, I think because I know of most of the cases in our listening area that were really horrible, I think of those as kind of like, those characterized for me what the impact was. But I also know countless anecdotes of people who, it just wasn't anything, it was nothing at all. So I guess the only way to answer that is to think about like how really specific points on the map were faced really severe devastation and other spots not at all. I also just had another thought. That one of the best things that I can say about some of the communication happening at that time was that it was an incredible learning opportunity, I think, for a lot of us about where we are and a little bit more about the landscape of where we are and some of the kind of like geo and geopolitical like context here. And that is not a conversation that I had ever been witness to here. And so having conversations on the air that were like, wait, what does it mean to be on a floodplain? And like, how does water work here? Which are so basic and seem like shouldn't only happen in emergency context. That was like, I don't think I'm the only person who felt like I learned more about this place in those few days than I had learned in like a year here in certain ways.
Mm-hmm. So you were new to the area when this happened. You've only been here about a year.
Mm-hmm. Right, I've been here about a year and a half. There also, just another comment about the extent of the damage. I had been working at a farm at the time in Ankrumdale that like had flooding and a lot of crop damage, but not the kind of damage that happened elsewhere. And so it was interesting to hear a lot of different people who were dealing with really different kinds of impact. For everybody, the experience of getting hit, I think, was pretty traumatic. So to hear that farmer crying and saying, like, I lost this one crop, and then to hear another farmer saying, I lost everything, like, both of that.
And that's in Columbia County, where they said, quote, there wasn't
right, exactly.
damage. It wasn't a damaged area.
That was another thing I think that we made an effort to do was to get some of the voices of people in Columbia County who had been hit, which I think there were, I think my sense of some of the damage here, I know of a couple farms that just had major flooding that made that season really hard. Right, and they were struggling with being in a spot that was supposedly not hit.
Mm-hmm. So that had a different impact for them.
Mm-hmm.
Of the things that you relied on, the tools that you are using, so I have a little list here.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just cheat and look at this so we can speed it up a bit. Which of these tools were you using and which one are you not using?
Okay, Facebook, yes, I was using.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see people's posts and also certain pages, like that Neighbors Helping Neighbors. Twitter, I was both tweeting. That was one way that I was putting out information. And I was...
As WGXC?
As WGXC, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was reading lots and lots and lots of tweets, although I don't really know how to navigate Twitter. That was mostly through the mm-hmm. Watershed. It was both through the Watershed post, live blog, and then... Again, I would like start to follow certain
mm-hmm.
tweeters.
Mm-hmm.
So
you saw people on the live blog, and then you'd follow them when you saw the. You'd say, "Oh, this Ivan's really good to follow." And
exactly,
follow
there were probably four or five characters in that live blog that I didn't. We probably both formally followed them. Like we probably mm-hmm. pressed follow mm-hmm. to see what they would tweet. But I also think I just kept an eye towards.
Mm-hmm.
what they were saying. Mm-hmm. Blog posts, again, the Watershed post was I can't say enough how mm-hmm. that was the centerpiece of everything.
Mm-hmm. And you were putting out stuff on the news blog?
Yes, although I wasn't personally.
Mm-hmm. But WGXC was.
Yeah, WGXC was. And I can't remember if there were other blog posts that I was, you know, like in the... I want to say that I went to Sam Pratt's blog, but I can't, but that might be, I don't know if he was doing any coverage around that time. Mm-hmm. He has for emergency situations since,
mm-hmm.
but I can't remember. That's another place I probably would have looked.
Mm-hmm. And what about landline? Did you use the landline at any point?
Yeah, here at the station.
The station's landline?
This is where we would get phone calls.
Okay, so people were calling you, right?
And not a ton, but enough that I felt like it was important to be here mm-hmm. to answer phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And those, again, were those were a lot of road closure questions.
Mm-hmm. And were they mostly about Greene County road closures, or were they about Greene and Columbia?
I think Greene and Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely about both. And then people were calling us to find out about where they could give stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of like Hudson people or Columbia County people trying to figure out how to connect with people doing relief work.
So it was directed towards Greene County or directed towards just
yeah.
the other side of the river more generally?
Yeah.
What would you say?
I would say that Columbia County was people around here were asking us how they could help Greene County.
Okay.
I think that's often how it was framed.
Okay, that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So the cell phone, were you using your cell phone for any of this work?
I think probably not really.
Okay. Computer?
Yes, majorly.
Okay, what computer or computers were you using? One computer?
My laptop.
Okay.
And then we were using, when we were back on the air, we were using, or for our web stream, we were using computers and we were
mm-hmm.
accessing other radio stations' streams, web streams that way. So the radio station computer.
Mm-hmm. So that was in addition, the radio station computer, were you doing stuff on the radio station computer, or is that just the web stream?
We would use the radio station computer to receive like WIOX or the WRIP
okay.
web stream.
And to rebroadcast? Or
yeah.
Okay. Okay. Did you listen to AM radio at any point?
Mm-mm.
Okay, and you were listening, it sounds like you were listening to, you mentioned RIX, or you mentioned the Rockbury station, and that's another community radio station, right? Mm-hmm. That one, and then RIP.
Which is a commercial radio station, and they had let us rebroadcast some of their stuff, and then at some point, they said we couldn't do that any longer, but we were in touch with them mm-hmm. throughout that time.
And then, so you had these two, was there any other FM stations you tuned into?
I don't think so. I think I checked WAMC's website to see their mm-hmm. coverage and to listen to their coverage, but I don't think I tuned in to do that.
Okay. And that's a regional
yeah.
NPR station. Okay. So you check that every once in a while type mm-hmm. of thing. Okay. And then you didn't use any other form of radio, like emergency service?
No, but we would, when we were on the air, we would get the EAS emergency alert
system. Oh, okay. So did you get any EAS alerts?
I don't remember. Just when I said that, I think we must have. I bet Al could check that.
Okay.
I bet there's a data of that, but I can't remember.
Okay. All right. Did you monitor any TV stations?
No, not at all.
None? Okay. Did you use any map services?
Yeah. I used Google Maps. That there were at least two people who were updating Google Maps with road closure information.
Mm-hmm.
They were using Google Maps to do some data visualization around where roads were closed.
Mm-hmm.
And those I was connected to through the Watershed Post live blog.
Mm-hmm.
And those were extremely useful when people were asking questions about, basically when someone would call and ask a question about a road closure,
mm-hmm.
I would like do a simple like an Apple Find search to mm-hmm. see if someone had recently posted about that road on the live blog,
mm-hmm.
and then also look at these maps and see what the most recent information had been about a road closure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that was, and how did that work out?
I remember both being really impressed by some of the Google mm-hmm. mapping stuff that people were doing,
mm-hmm.
and then also feeling like it was hard to give the correct information to people about what was open and what was closed. And that's also because it was just constantly changing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So overall, do you think that the maps that you were looking at were helpful or not helpful, or just you had to sort of beware?
I think they were helpful. I think they were definitely helpful. They were kind of the most helpful tool in answering that question, but I think it was hard to keep track of when things had been updated,
mm-hmm.
so it was hard to know what was still accurate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so somebody could drive by something and say, oh, that's open, and then maybe an engineer comes and says, oh, this isn't safe, and closes it, and then there's no way for you to check that map to see if...
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay. Newspapers? Was there any newspapers?
I want to say that I used the Daily Mail online. That was online. So uh-huh. there wasn't any newspapers in print that I was seeking. But I might be just confusing Ivan's... Oops. I think I might just be confusing Ivan's tweets
mm-hmm.
with actual Daily Mail coverage,
mm-hmm.
but I think that the Daily Mail was a resource that I used online.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. So you weren't looking at the other like the Greene County paper or anything. Okay. So, we're running short on time. I wanted to ask you, so we sort of talked about the emergency period, and then what came next? Like, you said the emergency, how long do you think the emergency period was?
I said 2 days, and then I said a week, as being kind of two tiers of emergency.
So there was like this critical people stuck on roofs period that's like 2 days.
Yeah.
And then this other period that comes out maybe like 9-10 days after the storm.
Right. That's like during this time, all we can do is talk about and try to spread information about mm-hmm. this thing. But we're not necessarily in like acute. And it sort of was like, especially for those of us who were addicted to the live blog,
mm-hmm.
there were 24-hour moderators, and then there were 18-hour moderators, and then there was 2 hours a day that it was open, that it was live, like it was.
Yeah.
And that, I think that felt to me like a marker of when we were moving out of.
Okay. So that actually became the marker of, okay, as the live blog went from 24 down to 2 over a period of time,
mm-hmm.
24 hours a day to 2 hours a day, and then eventually it stopped right. live blogging, that kind of marked the
totally
the how critical the situation was. That's interesting. Okay. And what, like, how, what is there a name that you could give to this period that came after the emergency period? Could you describe like what the content of the coverage is at that point, or what
which
people
this
need
one
to know? Yeah, well, that one
and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so there was relief.
Uh huh.
So
where does relief fall? Is that here or here? Or?
That's here.
Okay.
But extends into here.
Okay.
And that was both understanding like some of the local efforts going on, and then also reportage about FEMA and kind of bigger relief
uh-huh.
work going on, and kind of like big picture money stuff.
How long did that last?
I don't know. That information that is still comes up in our news blog mm-hmm. is like that continues to be something, you know, when we recently put out Jess Puglisi here recently did a little reportage piece about Prattsville.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going on there now. And okay. it was a lot of people feeling like they had been under the spotlight for a minute and then really forgotten.
Uh-huh.
That's like a 6-minute or a 10-minute piece in conjunction with a photography exhibition that's in Prattsville right now
mm-hmm.
that she just produced about 3 weeks ago. So that, the sort of like conversation about relief, feels like it's still happening.
Okay.
And
just in terms of the information elements of that, what feels, are there loose ends in terms of what you think the public is, what people are seeking in terms of information?
Well, I was so determined. At the time, it seemed like the only thing I could think clearly about was mm-hmm. the importance of using this as a way to foster much smarter conversation about
mm-hmm.
about like how to live in the places that we live
mm-hmm.
and this was like having a conversation with you on the air about what does it mean to be rebuilding in a place where this might happen again, kind of
mm-hmm.
like demystifying a lot of terminology like 100-year flood and understanding the limits of some of our science and understanding and how that informs and affects how we build in different places. Like I felt so certain as like this kind of an experienced manager of this very new media outlet that the best thing we could do would be to try to have like long form smart conversation about rebuilding here
mm-hmm.
and about preparation for future, for what seems like it'll be a more and more common scenario
mm-hmm.
and I'm not sure we've actually done that. I think during like maybe 3 weeks post, for 3 weeks after
mm-hmm.
Irene, I think that was really at the forefront of my mind, is like
mm-hmm.
how do you help cultivate that kind of conversation? And I think it's since sort of fallen off
mm-hmm.
just in this way that I was like, we will not let this conversation only be one that happens around emergency moments. Like
mm-hmm.
we will use this to become smarter and to collaborate with each other and to like be explicit about what we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that we've really succeeded at that, although it's something that I thought a lot about at that moment. So that feels like a big kind of loose
mm-hmm.
end.
Are there others? I mean, do you think, like, is there a, like this feeling that Prattsville has that they're being forgotten? Is there an information or communication component to that? Is there something that they're
I think I will. I think I also felt like there would be more follow-up around what I was just saying about feeling like the Greene County emergency information was inadequate. I think part of what I imagined a responsible community radio station could do would be to start to ask some bigger questions about communication and accountability, and like, can we as a radio station help the Greene County Emergency Management Office learn to tweet? Like, what are ways that we can help build this infrastructure in times of non-crisis? And I think that it's that kind of communication. It's this, like, if we all held each other accountable to being, to not only being better during those times, but to also communicate about this sort of thing over time. Then maybe that piece in Prattsville would have sounded different. And that's definitely, I think, something we think about here, but not necessarily something we're doing.
And that's a matter probably of resources, like,
right. There's other stuff.
Okay, so I want to respect the fact that you've got something else to do. So, is there anything that you want to add, or you think would be good for me to know?
I said this at the very beginning, but I still think of that period of time as the time that I, like, was introduced to Twitter. And that, just thinking about, like, I'm so uninterested in that part of the internet. And I have a deep, like, I am deeply interested in how it can serve in crisis. Because it was such a useful tool. And I do think it would still be useful. What I would like to read through my emails of those days and see if, like, those broadcasts from Phil are really interesting to listen to. But just to see, I'd be happy to give you a better sense of, like, who was asking us questions, who was reaching out to the station.
Yeah, I think that would be really helpful to have that. If you're willing to do that, that would be great.
Totally.
So maybe we can set up another time to go through it together.
It might be kind of useful for me to think a little bit after this conversation about things that I didn't, that I'm going to start remembering now.
Yeah, so some of the questions we didn't get to that maybe we can talk about next time is, who, like, if there was other people that you were collaborating with. I think we covered a lot of stuff, though.
I just remember, like, sitting on the floor in this station on that live blog, feeling like such a crazy person, like feeling like my best friends were these avatars.
Yeah, I'd love to know, I mean, a couple of things. Like, one is, I'd love to be able
find
to
those Google
find
map
the
guys.
Google Map people. That would be really helpful to talk to them, I think. And I'd love to know who your five people are. Are you still following them or in contact with them?
No, not really. But Andrea was totally one of them. And Ivan, and one of the Google Maps guys, like something from...
Are you guys friends on Facebook or anything? Or nothing?
Andrea, her and I, like, became friends during that time. And internet friends via live blog, like, or born of the live blog. And now I've since met her.
So are you friends? You hang out and stuff?
No, but I see her around town, and we're like online friends. You're maybe one of my only online friends. It's way more online than, like, she'll like posts of mine on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
We have, like, we're buddies.
Cool.
Do you want to check this out?
Sorry, I just really want to check it out. Yeah, I guess.
Or you can sit here and look, get the audio off of the card.
Yeah.
And then put it back.
I guess I'll check it out if that's, like.